And we are back with episode number 21 of Clubcast. And back again, we can't seem to get rid of them. These Mets fans always seem to come back. We got Kevin and Josh from Piping Hot Gas joining the show yet again. We got a lot more baseball to kind of catch up with them. But everybody, how are you guys all doing tonight? Obviously, we got a couple things to talk about, especially breaking news with the Stroman stuff that we'll get to later. But Jake, I'll start with you. How you doing?
I'm living, man. I'm living. I'm alive. That's all that matters.
And then, obviously, Kevin and Josh, thank you guys for coming on. How you both doing?
Thanks for having us. I'm chilling. Josh, how you doing?
Dude, I'm doing great. I'm not sure I'm going to be feeling great after we talk about how the Mets have been doing, but you know, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
All right. Yeah, well, let's just jump right into it before we get to the Mets talk. Obviously, it's kind of been a conversation getter throughout the entire offseason. I remember when we had Kevin on last time, he kind of pitched his dream Mets offseason, and it was like signing all-star players, Ohtani, and every other name under the sun, and we all laughed. But then the Dodgers ended up just doing that exact same thing. So I'm not sure if the Dodgers were listening to this episode, to that episode, Kevin was shouting out all his dreams for the Mets, and then they went out and did it. But we haven't talked to them since Ohtani made the trip to the Dodgers. They've made a bunch of moves. Me and Jake talked about it last episode about all the stuff that they've done, pretty much revamping the entire roster, not even just for just this upcoming season, but their outlook for the next 5 to 10 years looks drastically different than the previous 10 years. So I want to kind of get your guys' opinion, and I'll start with Josh. The consensus around a lot of teams in baseball and a lot of fans is that what the Dodgers are doing is bad for baseball. And you're a Mets fan, and so is Kevin, but I feel like this is a sentiment that you heard a lot last offseason. So do you think teams spending this much money, is it bad for baseball?
In the long, like, I don't think owners spending money will ever be a bad thing, because in the end, like, I personally believe, like, every, like, team that thinks it's a bad thing that the owners are spending money is always the teams that, like, you know, they have the stingiest owners. They don't want to improve the team. It's like when you spend the money and, you know, you're able to do this and under, like, the rules that MLB has, it's showing that you want to have a competitive team. You want to be able to compete year in, year out. So I can kind of see from a standpoint why people think it would be ruining baseball. But if you think from, like, a logistical sense and, like, everything else in that vein, it's really not all that bad. It should be a good thing, or be considered a good thing,
I definitely agree with that one. And it just seems like it seems this offseason was the breaking point. Last season, you know, everybody got on Steve Cohen about the amount of money that the Mets spent, but it was just, you know, when it didn't work out for the Mets, unfortunately for you guys, it ended up being the butt end of a joke. So, but I think that just goes to show that no matter how much money you spend, nothing's guaranteed in this sport. Mm-hmm. So to kind of go along with that, Kevin, let me get some of your opinions on, do you think teams like the Dodgers, how they're spending money right now, how they're doing the deferments, do you think that's just bad for the sport, or are you all for it? Do you think the Dodgers should have complete free reins to do whatever they want to do?
I mean, I don't think it's bad for the sport. It's just like it's a bad look if you spend all this money and then you don't go nowhere. Like, mm-hmm. I went to a Mets game last year, and some fan was like yelling at us because he was like, "Oh, highest payroll in baseball, and you guys are losing to the Rockies or whatever it was, or something like that." So it's like it's good for baseball, but then it's bad for the fans. Like, you got this team that's going to spend all this money, and then they don't do nothing with it. And, you know, now the fans got to deal with that. The players got to deal with that. Like, so it's, you know, it's like it's good and bad. Like,
yeah, I definitely agree with that. There are some good things and bad things about it. And I guess fortunately for us, we're all pretty much in that realm of all of our favorite teams are big market teams, whether it's myself with the Dodgers, you guys with the Mets. And then we'll get to Jake's opinion on it now with the Philadelphia Phillies, who they aren't shy to spend any money, especially recently. So, Jake, let me get your opinion on this before we move on to the next topic. Dodgers, spending money, are you for it? Are you against it? Would you change some things in the future? Let me get your take on this.
Yeah, there's really kind of two sides. It kind of goes off what Josh said. you know, it's not the Dodgers. I think it's kind of bad for baseball, but it's not the Dodgers' fault or even problem. I think the biggest problem is now you're going to have a bigger divide between these teams. You're going to have the teams that, you know, are the upper echelon. We already talked about it, those top three teams in the NL. You have these guys, big market teams, or when they want to act like it, buying these big players, giving out these big contracts. That just gives these smaller owners like, you know, Tyler's Pirates and these the Athletics reasons to not buy. They're going to go, hey, there's no way we're competing with that, you know, billion-dollar offseason that the Dodgers just have. Why even try? And I think that's where the problem lies, more than it being – than like spending money. I don't think that's an issue. I don't think the $1 billion is an issue. Anybody can spend, you know, a shit ton of money. The Red Sox, we see it, they didn't do much this offseason. When they want to act like a big market team, they can, but they don't because whatever reason they like to think. But it's, I just think the divide is going to get bigger between teams that are spending and teams that don't really want to spend, like the business teams, the teams that are there to make money, the Josh Harris teams. I just don't like that. And obviously, we talked about it before, you and me. I don't know about these guys, the Mets fans, but we like seeing players stay. Players stay home. You know, I'm wearing a Reese Hoskins shirt. I like players staying with their teams for a longer time. So again, that's something I don't, you know, really like. But it's going to happen in baseball. It's going to happen in sports in the modern day. A lot of movement between players and teams and things like that. So I don't think it's really bad for baseball. I just think it gives the cheaper owners, the more stingy owners, another excuse to not go out and spend.
Yeah. I mean, before we move on to the next topic, kind of like my two cents about it is obviously I agree with it. I like with all the points that were made, but as a Dodgers fan, I want them to do this. I've been waiting for them to have an offseason like this for a while because even though the Dodgers have always had money, it seems like a lot of their moves have been more on trade and then getting some high upside guys. Yes, they splash around and get a Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, but that was through a trade. You know, they let a lot of guys walk throughout the past 3 years. You know, there's no Cody Bellinger on the scene. There's no Corey Seager on the scene. There's no Trey Turner on this team anymore. And even Clayton Kershaw, he's still a free agent right now. And I'm kind of like 50-50 if he returns to the team too. In terms of the divide between the teams, I think I tweeted out the other day that the biggest issue right now, and we've kind of alluded to this, and I feel like I have to write an article about it, is just a disparity between the teams that have their TV deals in a good good spot and the teams that don't. And most of the teams that don't have their TV deals were with the Bally Sports. Their ownership group, they went bankrupt. So they, like a lot of teams that you're seeing that are trying to shed payroll or not make any moves at all, those are the teams that were in Bally's. You know, that's the Padres, that's the Guardians, that's the Texas Rangers, who have been super hesitant to even spend money right now. I put out a tweet the other day, the Dodgers, they have no issue right now. Their TV deal gives them almost $330 to $70 million annually. They signed like an $8.6 billion deal with Time Warner Cable back in 2012. There's still a lot of that revenue gets distributed to all the other teams, but the Dodgers still get like 48% to 55% of that cut. That literally just pays their payroll for the most part. So it gives them the opportunity to do whatever they want. I put it in comparison to the Yankees and the Met and the Yankees and the Red Sox, who in terms of East Coast market, they are the biggest, and their TV deals don't even cover the Dodgers' entire TV deal per year. So there is a disparity. I said, is it fair? I said, probably not, maybe not, but this is the deal. It was agreed to by the owners. It was agreed to by the commissioner. And that's just kind of the world you got to live in right now. But it's hard to argue saying, all right, the LA and New York and Philadelphia market, they're so big and they get so much revenue. It is fair that they can spend more than the other teams just because they have a bigger fan base. They have a larger market that gives them the ability to spend the money. So, and I don't really know if there's even a way to really fix that, even with the next potential lockout in like 3 or 4 years. I think it'll be hard.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I don't think there's a way to change this. The only way, which has been a non-starter over the years, was for the PA, was the salary cap. And I would much rather have what the Dodgers are doing than have a salary cap in baseball. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. I see a kind of a problem, like you said. Is it fair? Probably not. But, like, any team could do this. I understand the Dodgers have this big payroll and then their massive TV deal and stuff, but it's a business at the end of the day. You run your business better, you get more money, you can be more successful.
I also think, and I'll kind of get your guys' opinions on this before we move on. I think it wouldn't be a big deal if it wasn't so much deferred payments.
Yeah.
And I think that's the big thing with the move right now. But I think a lot of people need to understand that what Ohtani did with his deferments, no player ever again in our lifetime will probably do it. And that's because no player in our lifetime is probably going to play. You don't even have to say he's the best baseball player of all time, but the amount of money he makes just in marketing alone, he can defer almost all his money and he doesn't care because he makes around 50 to 70 million just off of that himself. But then when you start deferring payments for, you know, they have Mookie Betts deferred, they have Freddie Freeman deferred, Teoscar Hernandez, 1-year deal, deferred. So it can, I kind of think they're just doing it as a joke at this point. So I'm kind of want to get your like opinions on this because team in your guys' division made this famous. The Nationals are like notoriously famous for doing deferred payments. Their most famous is with Strasburg and then Max Scherzer. So I kind of want to get your opinion on the deferred payments. Do you like it? And I'll start with Josh. Do you like deferred payments?
I got like a whole like mixed opinion on the deferred payments. Like obviously when the Ohtani thing happened, that's just like, that's something we've never really like seen before. You know, like, he signed a $700 million contract and is deferring 68 of the 70 million he would get from that contract. So to where a player like Shohei Ohtani is making $2 million this year off of his contract. It's just like, it's just weird for me to think about just because like, you know who he is and it's like, you know, he's like worth more than that, but just seeing that number being assigned to him for that contract is just, it's just weird to me. I don't think I'll ever be used to that, something like that.
I definitely think that's a good point. Kevin, what do you think about deferred payments?
I'm not a fan of it. Like, I know it's not all about the money and everything, but like, I mean, you deserve to get paid that much money. You deserve to get all of that money. Like, I don't like it. I think it's stupid. I don't want to see any more of it, but like, I feel like it's going to happen, not a lot, but like it's just going to keep happening.
Yeah. And then Jake, deferred payments, like them, hate it.
It's a business, man. At the end of the day, like, it's a business. If Shohei Ohtani or X player can afford to not take a contract basically for 10 years and wants to do that, let him do it. I mean, like, if your boss came to you and was like, hey, I'll give you, you know, $10 million down the line if you work for free, I mean, most people would do it. It's a thing that's agreed upon the players. It's not, it, like you said, it's been happening for a long time. It's just outrageous with the Ohtani contract. But like you said, this situation will never happen again. So I mean, it's annoying sometimes. I think it's just annoying because the Dodgers are becoming like the 2021 Rams and just signing everybody and trading for everybody. But like, it's a business at the end of the day. And like you said, both parties have to agree on it. So,
yeah, that is the big thing that I would take away, is that both, I brought it up yesterday on the Bleed Blows podcast, both players and owners and the GMs, they have to agree to it. A player could just say, I don't want deferment to go sign somewhere else. So that is a big takeaway from that. Kind of moving on, we'll go from one big market team to the other. And that is the New York Mets, who have had an interesting offseason compared to last year's offseason, where they kind of went balls of the wall spending. You know, they get eliminated in the NL wild card to the San Diego Padres. They go big again, get some of the biggest free agents out in the market, including Justin Verlander, who now no longer on the team. They're kind of going in a different direction. I kind of want to get two Mets fans' thoughts on what they are doing this offseason. Are they even trying to compete in 2024? They will say yes, but do you guys buy it? So, Josh, do you buy that the Mets are trying to compete in 2024?
It's honestly like so hard for me to tell because it's just like if we're going just straight off the offseason so far and like who they've signed, like they went out and got Severino, who isn't a terrible pickup by any means. But, you know, it's when you look at everything as a whole, like signing all these guys to 1 year deals who have like haven't had the best years in the MLB, quite like just to be honest, it you want to say no, but then like when you're a fan and you watch the team and you know like the players that you had on the roster already, you know how they play, it's like you know that they're going to try to compete. So like from a player standpoint, they're definitely going to try to compete. But from an ownership standpoint, like trying to make the team overall like better, I don't think they are. It's all just going to come down to like how the players are going to perform, the morale like overall in the clubhouse, and what they feel like they can do and how far they can go. I think like I don't think they're going to get any help from ownership this season at all.
Do you think with the hiring of David Stearns, do you think they're trying to compete, but they're still trying to transition, and then their ultimate goal is to compete in 2025?
With Stearns, I think this is going to be like more of a transition year. Like, obviously they brought him on, and like it was like before the season, like we all knew it was going to happen, everything that was going to go down. But you know, with trading Scherzer and Verlander, and basically like getting rid of your two biggest free agent acquisitions that you had expected to be with the team at least like through this season, and then getting rid of them, I think it's overall just going to be a transition year for him. And then next year, just like him setting up to see how the team performs and going from there.
Yeah. Kevin, you had very huge goals for the Mets this offseason, especially with a lot of the free agents that have been out there. Uncle Stevie, you know, we thought he was going to spend big. I'm kind of interested to see how you would grade this offseason for your Mets so far.
Terrible. It has been a terrible offseason. All right, like, they offered Yamamoto a lot of money. They offered him the same amount, it's pretty much the same contract as the Dodgers. He didn't take it. That's not their fault. But it is terrible. It is... I'm not excited for the season at all. Last season was terrible. It was just like I said, I can't think of one exciting moment, or I could think of maybe one, but like last year there was not that many exciting moments happened. Name it. Pete Alonso hit a home run and me and Josh were at that game. And Josh's dad left and was like, "I'm gonna go wait outside the stadium." He goes, "We were down or whatever." Alvarez hit a tying home run or something like that. Pete Alonso hit the home run, and I was so pumped.
Thought that was going to be the start of everything.
I was the excitement level was up here. Like, it was up, and then just the whole season was just in shambles. And I was excited for this offseason. I was like, oh, the Mets, I don't know, man. It's just, it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you... I understand Yamamoto. I think Mets fans can't be mad because I'm going to be honest with you guys. I don't think he wanted to go anywhere except to the Dodgers. I think he was taking Steve Cohen and all these other guys for a ride. Basically the what I would do, I would get everything handed to me. You know, they took him out to dinner. They bought him jerseys.
He had dinner at his house, bro.
They gave him everything. And then he said, "That's cool. I'm going to go to the Dodgers though." And then they're probably just like, but I understand that. So that part of free agency sucks because I feel like at the end of the day, the players know where they want to go. Like, I think Yamamoto knew where he wanted to go. Oh, I thought Ohtani knew where he wanted to go. And they were just kind of playing around in the market using teams to get leverage. And the Mets kind of just been being swindled lately. And I think it shows that money isn't the answer to everything. And I think Cohen's kind of learned this a little bit. And I think that's why David Stearns is a smart hire, because I think they're going to try to do what the Dodgers are doing. And that's what Cohen alluded to when he bought the team. He said, "I want to model their success." He literally name dropped the Dodgers. And now that they have Stearns, this is a guy that uses analytics and drafts well and develops well. But now he has the pocketbook of Stephen Cohen and the Mets payroll. We've already seen what he's willing to spend. I think the combination of Stearns will make him spend smartly. And I think it is going to be a transition year. I don't see how it couldn't be. Obviously, they're going to try to compete. Maybe they get around. I'll kind of throw around the over-under and wins once we're done talking about it. I'm kind of interested in what you guys think about that. But I don't think – I agree with Kevin. I think if I was a Mets fan, it would be really hard to be excited about this year, especially the teams in their division, which that brings me to the next guy. Philadelphia Phillies, they still retain some of their guys. Braves are making moves. Are you kind of confused about the direction the Mets are going as a Phillies fan looking in on them, or do you kind of agree with what Josh kind of alluded to, I alluded to, where they're transitioning, their goal is to compete in probably the next 2 years?
I think it's real tough for them because I feel like they get the short end of the stick a lot. Like you said, if I'm a free agent, you know, I'm gonna get everybody in. I feel like a lot like the Phillies have been recently with most starting pitching free agents. The Mets are just getting thrown in on everybody. So when they go out and make, you know, their big splash signing of Harrison Bader, it makes them really, you know, really distraught. I don't know. They made some good signs. Like Josh said, Luis Severino has some top end, you know, stuff. I like Joey Wendell. Could play some good second base for you. Because Ryan Mauricio's, you know, dead. Harrison Bader, again, I make fun of it, but he could have upside. I think they have a ton of low-risk, high-reward type guys. It's tough with the change of ownership and things like that. But, I mean, honestly, if they put that together a little win streak and they're, you know, 8 games out of a wild card, 6 games out of a wild card – you could see him buying some more, you know, low risk, high reward guys. The deadline, just trying to make a push, because there's a lot that bottom tier, not necessarily bottom tier, but lower tier playoff teams in the National League is, you know, wide open. I mean, last year the Marlins were in it. The Reds were a couple games out. The Padres almost made the playoffs. They have guys. But like I said, it's tough with change of ownership and what they went through with all that dead cap and the tax and everything. It would be real tough for them to go out and spend. So it's kind of just, you know, sitting on their hands and hoping they get lucky with some of these signs.
Alrighty. I definitely agree with that. I think we're kind of all on the same page where kind of the Mets can compete this year. But if you ask them and you look deep into their brain, they would probably be saying, we're hoping to compete in the next 2 to 3 years, get some of these prospects up, maybe sell off some more assets. They still have to deal with the Pete Alonso thing, which I know you guys are passionate about. DraftKings has the over under win total as of this, I think when this article is posted, December 30th at 83.5 wins. I'll go with Jake. Are you taking the over or under in that?
Under. I think the Marlins ended with what, 84 or 85 last year. That's a four good team. I wouldn't call the Mets a good team, but four halfway decent teams and, you know, two of the best teams in the National League in that division. It's tough to win 84 games. I have to go the under.
Kevin, disappointed Mets fan, what are you taking? Are you taking the over or the under?
Under. We are tanking. That's it. The tank is on.
All right, Josh, let's hear. You're the one with optimism. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over. I don't think they're gonna be it. I don't think they're gonna hit 90, but I think they're finishing above 500. You know that. I don't know. I don't know if that's just like the optimism in me speaking, or me wanting to be different, or like me actually believing that they can do it. So I guess we'll find out. But I think it's over.
Usually I'm optimistic too. That's the best part.
I'm actually going to take the over. I think they can pull together at least 84, 85 wins. I think the Marlins are going to regress hard because it just seems like they're kind of, I don't know what they've been doing this offseason. They don't have offense and all of their offensive players look like they're leaving, like Jorge Soler is the next guy. I don't think the Mets got that much like drastically worse, and they took a lot of guys, you know, they have a lot of upside. Bader, you know, a lot of people were clowning him, but Bader rakes against lefties, and the Braves are a team that has a shit ton of lefties. That's a move to kind of counteract them, and then you're getting elite defense out there. And I think for the Mets' sake, they hope to at least compete for a wild card, because I think at the end of the day, if you're going to try to extend Pete Alonso, he's going to be looking at some of that stuff. Like, he's going to want to see that they're trying to put their best chips forward. Even if it's not all in this season, if they can at least kind of compete for a wild card, that helps them for their plan, I assume, in 2025. So I'll take the over just because I feel like they can manage a wild card race, but there's just so many good teams in the National League. So I wouldn't be surprised if they finished with less, but I think the Mets, you can pencil them in for 84 wins.
Pete only cares about winning the home run derby. Let's be honest.
All
right,
dude.
He's not allowed to play the home run derby this year. They told him no.
He probably just did it.
All righty. From one New York team to the other, and this kind of just broke while we were recording this a little bit before. We saw that Marcus Stroman and the New York Yankees were kind of rumored, kind of all over the place, like this MLB offseason has been with reporting. One reporter says that they have mutual interest. The next one says, oh, no, they don't have mutual interest. And then we get about like 10, 15 minutes ago, Marcus Stroman signing with the Yankees. I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on this. I'll start with you, Jake. I know we were kind of talking about it a little bit, so I'm interested to see your take on Marcus Stroman taking on the other side of the New York baseball world, joining the real team of New York, the New York Yankees.
I'll just let that sit for a little bit. No, it's, you know, if he didn't talk all that shit about him, he looks like a Yankee, man. Like, the way he acts, like, the way he's, like, annoying, the way that most people don't like him, it kind of fits the Yankees. I don't think it's as big as a deal as their Yankees fans probably think it is. 6.06 ERA and 11 starts at Yankee Stadium over his career. It's a good indicator of that. I just can't understand his thinking. Like, I guess a guy like that has talked trash on many organizations, but he specifically went towards that Yankees organization, which is why I believe those reports, like you said, that the Yankees really didn't have much interest at first. But while we were recording this, there were sources, Mike Rodriguez from ESPN said Yankees offered 5 for $150 to Blake Snell, but Blake Snell wanted more, an extra year at least. So they kind of pivoted towards Stroman, which kind of says a lot for Blake Snell if that's what they're offering and he's still not even getting that. So honestly, the Stroman signing means more to me for the starting pitching market and Blake Snell than it really does for Stroman and the Yankees.
Yeah, I like those points, especially with the Stroman thing. I know the Yankees have been showing extreme interest. I am not on the Blake Snell bandwagon. I think he's extremely overrated. Maybe not overrated, but he's definitely not worth the penny he wants because of how sporadic his career's been. Similar to Cody Bellinger, me and you have had that conversation in previous episodes before. Kevin, obviously the New York Mets, they have had Marcus Stroman before. He had a decent tenure there, obviously off the field and in the way he treated the fans and chirped with people online. Bad look, but baseball player Marcus Stroman, is this a good move for the New York Yankees?
I mean, I don't know. Like you said, he was a decent Met, and like once he left, he just talked all this shit. And I mean, he didn't really have a good season last year because he was hurt for like most of it, right? I feel like
he got hurt in the second half. Yeah.
So it's like, if it's gonna cause the Yankees to lose. Okay, good, but like it's definitely weird for him to go to the Yankees, but like I also feel like it fits him, you know. He's got that jerk mentality to him and everybody hates him, so it's like, go ahead, knock yourself out.
I definitely agree with that. At when it was starting to be rumored, I didn't think it was going to be a good fit. But then the more I thought about it, I said, he kind of is a Yankee. He kind of embodies it. Josh, I'll kind of ask you the same question that I asked Kevin. Like, you know, you've seen Stroman pitch. I'm pretty sure I remember you being extremely high on him before. And he had a decent tenure as a Met. He had a decent tenure as a Cub last year. If injuries didn't derail the rest of his season, you know, he was in the Cy Young race. So, is this a big move for the Yankees? Does this push the needle in terms of them being going from missing the playoffs to making the playoffs?
I really like what Jake said about how I think this is a move that's going to affect the pitching market more than I think it's going to affect how the Yankees actually perform next season. Because it's I said it ever since Stroman left the Mets. It's like he was not a bad pitcher at all. Like, just strictly looking at the baseball player, Stroman was not a bad pitcher for the Mets. And I did want them to bring him back on like a little short-term deal, because, you know, I thought like they were going in a good direction to where like they could compete for something. And like, I always saw Stroman as a good like 2-3 slot pitcher. I never saw him as an ace. Like, he was just never consistent enough in my eyes to warrant like ace status. So when he signed with the Cubs for all that money, I thought he was extremely overvalued when he signed there. But I don't mean, we don't know how much the Yankees gave him yet, so we gotta wait to see when that comes out. But, you know, finished with a 3.95, just under four. So I don't think he's gonna, I think he will fit into that 2-3 slot role like I usually see him in. But it's just a matter if he can stay consistent. And ultimately, even though I know it's not like directly on field related, he's got to like cut the off field stuff out, because I feel like that's going to play a major part in like how the Yankees perform overall too, and how people look at him and how he will play. Because you know how passionate Yankee fans can get about their players as soon as they have one bad game, and we know how Stroman is on Twitter. So I mean, it's like once he has that first bad game, it's just like it's all going to depend on how he handles that.
No, dude, yeah. I just read the perfect thing while you were saying that. It says Marcus Stroman is going to pitch a gem and come to Twitter and see no way celebrating it because he has us all blocked.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how he takes on the New York media again, and especially interacting now with the other side of New York with the Yankees. So that's definitely something to look forward to. In terms of baseball, though, Stroman, he is not going to blow you by with his fastball. He's not going to strike you out. He's not going to get you to chase. He doesn't really have many good breaking stuff. What he excels at is weak barrel and weak contact and putting the ball in play. And if you have a really good defense behind you, especially infield defense, because his ground ball percentage was in the 94th percentile, which is like elite. And that could fly in New York, especially even though they do have a smaller stadium, he could get by, which is why when I started looking into it more, I said, you know, this kind of does make sense for the Yankees. You know, he's not going to be their ace. He's not going to be their two. He's going to be their third or fourth starter. Get him in there. Even though he battled injuries last year, he still almost pitched 140 innings, made 25 starts. That's something the Yankees desperately need. That's something every team would take, no doubt about it. It's going to be interesting to see what type of deal he gets. I imagine that he probably signed a 2-3 year deal. Obviously a lower AAV than what Blake Snell is going to get. But it's probably in that 15 to 20 million range. Because before he got injured last year, you know, he knew he was going to opt out, and he probably could have gotten like a 3-5 year deal if he really wanted to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he just turned 30 or 31, not that I think mm-hmm. this year. So you could get him to that type of deal. I think it won't really put the Yankees that much like over, but it is going to make them a better team. It is going to make their rotation that much deeper. They're also hoping that Carlos Rondon like bounces back in a big way, where he was pretty much awful. Like, he was just straight up awful last mm-hmm. year, probably the worst pitcher in the American League at least. But pair him with Garrett Cole, who was arguably the best pitcher in the American League last year, winning the Cy Young. We can see how dominant this Yankees team can be, but you know, they really have to keep their characters in check. And bringing in Stroman, who's the other head case they brought in? Apparently, you know, they brought in Alex Verdugo. I'm super interested to see how that dugout interacts with each other, because I don't want to see another like Jonathan Papelbon, Bryce Harper incident in the goddamn dugout. But that just seems like what it may be. I'm not too sure. But I like the move. I think it makes sense, especially if the Yankees were in on Snell, but they didn't want to meet his asking price. So they probably said, okay, well, we'll just get this guy and we'll figure it out after then. Maybe they make a trade for a Corbin Burns or something, either in the offseason or maybe at the deadline. So I think there's always room for improvement regardless, but I do like the move for the Yankees. It's going to be interesting with the dynamic in the clubhouse. But I think at the end of the day, if Stroman can put his ego to the side and just cares about winning, I don't know as a Yankees fan how you could hate this deal.
Yeah, definitely.
It's tough to hate on a 2-year deal, like a 2-3-year deal, especially a pitcher when you need extra depth. I mean,
And we don't know if he's going to put in like an opt out again, because that's what he had with the Cubs. So maybe he wants to bank on himself having a healthy year. I'm not too sure. He probably is going to take the guaranteed money in years now, just because he did battle injuries with the Mets. He did battle injuries with the Cubs. Your body doesn't get better when you get older. It gets worse. So I feel like now if he did get a multi-year deal, it probably has no opt outs. Maybe it's an incentive laden deal. Maybe it's like, hey, get to 150 innings pitched, then you get like an extra like 500K or something like that, something in those lines. So that'll be interesting to see on it as we probably by this time tomorrow when we post the episode, they'll have the entire contract out. But that's going to be something I'm looking at.
Yeah, the incentive contracts have been real popular this offseason. Mm-hmm. I can easily see that.
Especially from pitchers.
Yeah.
Well, we got another pitcher that signed an incentive-laden contract, and that is one Shota Imanaga. Who was rumored all offseason to get that $100 million contract, especially after Yamamoto signed with the Dodgers for $325 million. I thought it was a no-brainer that he was going to get over at least $100 million. And then the Cubs kind of shocked us, getting him, I believe, the current deal, at least the last time I saw it, was at least 2 years, and I believe like 30 or 35 million, something in that range. Correct me if I'm wrong there. Has the ability to turn into like a 5-year, $80 million deal. But yeah, I was super shocked to see that it was that low. I wasn't as shocked to see him go to the Cubs, because that was just one of the teams that I felt like had to make a move this offseason. They still have to make upgrades at the pitch in their pitching department. So I'll start with you, Josh. Imanaga going to the Cubs. Does it move you? Do you think it's a good move? And were you shocked by the amount of money he didn't sign for?
I think it definitely makes the Cubs a lot better than, you know, where they were. Still got a lot of holes to fill, like you said. Imanaga was a name like that I personally like thought the Mets should go after the whole Yamamoto thing fell through. Like, I was looking at all these guys before they were posted or whatever, and I saw Imanaga, you know, being the lefty. I told myself if Yamamoto doesn't work out, I would like the Mets to, like, you know, go after him, because the Mets haven't had a solid lefty in I don't know how long. So I thought that'd be a good pickup. And really, wherever this guy went, I thought, you know, he's – I don't want to say a dominant lefty yet, because, we got to see what he does. But a lefty of his caliber going anywhere is just going to make any team better. So, like, for that being the Cubs, and especially for the money that they got, I think it's a really good move, because it still gives them, like, that flexibility to – fill in where they're still weak and all that, coming off the year that they had basically surprising everybody with how good that they played. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out.
I'll go to someone that was a huge Imanaga fan and that was pushing for him extremely hard. Jake, were you shocked that he signed for under 100, and how shocked were you that, say, your Phillies didn't even match that offer?
Who's Imanaga, bro? I think the contract shocked me. So everybody saw the post that I had. I thought he was going to get over that 100 million mark. It was between the Red Sox and Cubs, definitely come down the stretch. But the Cubs, I mean, they had that same kind of question mark off season with, say, a Suzuki when they signed him. Just like a random contract out of nowhere. It doesn't move me. I was an Imanaga guy for the Phillies because he would be a fourth, fifth, sixth starter. The Cubs have, you know, Justin Steele, Kyle Hendricks, and then, like, nothing. They have Jameson Taillon, who was bad last year. Honestly, Imanaga's a question mark still. You can't trust a guy to be a top, you know, two, three. Obviously, Justin Steele's probably your one. But he's due for regression. Like, is he going to have a year like he had last year? Is Kyle Hendricks going to have a 3.5 ERA like he did last year? I just don't see that happening. Imanaga, though, could be very good in Chicago, Yu Darvish-esque type start to his career. I think they still need to go make moves. They need a star, whether it's a star pitcher or a star hitter. So if it's not Bellinger, I could easily see them being in on Snell on a deal like the Yankees offered, like five for 30 AAV, or even six for like 28 AAV, something like that. If they get Bellinger back, which I see is the most likely spot probably right now, they still need another pitcher, probably just some guy who can eat innings, get you outs. Like Lorenzen would be a perfect candidate to be a fifth starter for that team, a fourth starter for that team. So that team's still going to be good. They just don't hit for enough power, in my opinion. And in today's MLB, hitting for power and power pitching is where you kind of win games. So I think another move has to come, but the NL Central is kind of weak, so who knows?
Yeah. Kevin, I'll close it out with you. Imanaga, not too sure how much you knew about him, how much you wanted him, but were you shocked to kind of see how it's pretty much was rumored everywhere that he was getting over that $100 million mark to sign for as low as he did? And then is it enough for the Cubs? Like, do they need to make more moves?
So yeah, I don't really know much about this guy, but I've seen on Twitter that he was supposed to get all this money and then the Cubs to get him for cheap. I mean, that's good for the Cubs, because like Josh said, they can get more guys for that team, because I mean, they were pretty decent last year. They almost made the playoffs, right? Was it? So it's like, yeah. They went from winning the World Series to getting rid of everybody being, you know, terrible. And then now they're coming back up again. So it's like, you know, this could be good. They got him for cheap, and then they can go get, you know, more pitching and figure that out and maybe, you know, take over the Central.
Yeah. I mean, I like the deal. I mean, you can never have too much starting pitching. And he is a lefty. You get him in a rotation that isn't as deep as it once was. So I'm interested to see if they continue to add to it. Like Jake said, you know, maybe Blake Snell is a good fit for that rotation. I think it would be. A Cody Bellinger reunion definitely makes sense. That should be in the cards. But yeah, I like the move. You can't not like the move, especially with the amount of money he's signing for. Because say if it doesn't work out, well, okay. You only got him for like that 30-ish, 40 million, and then you had to pay the posting fee. But at the end of the day, the Cubs are like the third or fourth most valuable franchise in baseball. So I don't think they care. But yeah, they did just miss the playoffs last year, Kevin. And if it wasn't for, say, a Suzuki just misplaying that ball in the outfield, they would have been the wildcard team, not the Diamondbacks. So you're talking about a whole different ball game in terms of October last year if the Cubs made the playoffs as the last wildcard seed. But this kind of pivots to our next and last question. And you could kind of involve the Cubs in this. I'm interested to see what you guys kind of have as like a brief answer with it. The offseason, you know, we mentioned me and Jake last episode that there's around 6 to 5 weeks left until like pitchers and catchers report, until the spring training starts, and then the offseason is officially over. There's obviously been a lot of winners, but there's also been a bunch of teams that I feel like haven't made the moves that they needed to make. So I'll start with you, Josh. In terms of teams not named the Mets, who do you think has had the biggest disappointing offseason so far?
In a general standpoint that I'm like confident I can say right now, it's definitely the Marlins, because you know, we've seen like the Marlins like basically came out of nowhere a couple years ago and were like extremely competitive for no reason, just surprised everybody. And they haven't really like ridden that high ever since then. Like in terms of like big signings and everything, and especially this offseason, they haven't had any major league signings at all. Like, and you know, like you said earlier, they're going to lose Jorge Soler. They got some guys up there getting an age. Like their only real force of star power that I can name off the top of my head is Jazz Chisholm. And, you know, he's not going to be the answer to their problems that they're going to have over there, because they haven't added anything to their team when you got a guy that's as one dimensional as he is, especially on the offensive side. And so that the Marlins are the ones that I would say, like, no matter what they do now, they've had the most disappointing offseason so far. But like, the Cubs are another team I was looking at, even with the Imanaga deal. It depends on what you guys said. If they don't go out and get that bat or that pitcher that they need to like fill out the fill out the weak spots, then I think in the end this will be a more disappointing offseason than an optimistic one.
All right. And then, Kevin, what would be a team that you would think that has just had not the best offseason? You know, maybe they went into the offseason trying to make a big splash and then it just hasn't worked out. What team are you picking there?
I mean, Marlins is definitely a great answer, but, like, I haven't seen much, like, with, like, the Giants or, like, the Red Sox making any moves. So it's, like – or, like, the Diamondbacks, I feel like I haven't seen much of. So it's, like – Marlins definitely great answer though, because like they haven't done nothing. I don't think they signed anybody.
So. Yeah, they're actually the only team that hasn't signed a free agent. the Marlins. So yeah, that's definitely, I guess, the go to answer right there. You know, the team that hasn't done literally anything, and then they're also just trying to actively shop arguably their most valuable asset in Jesus Luzardo. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a teardown they are doing in Miami. So. Jake, kind of going with you, I feel like there's a bunch of teams that we've talked about off air. Most disappointing offseason, who is it?
We're going to walk around the question like I normally like to do. First, I'd like to agree with Josh because as Cody, it's one thing I'll disagree with Cody on. I think the Marlins could be a lot better than people think just because of that pitching. That pitching's young and really, really good. If they got a couple bats and, you know, some good defenders out there in that big outfield at Marlins Park, they can be a contender. So that's kind of disappointing to me. Kev said Giants or Red Sox, two of the teams I had. Giants just seem to miss out on every big free agent. I don't know. I guess now people are shitting on the city of San Francisco, so I don't know how you get much worse than that. So that's, you know, a pretty bad offseason. And then, again, the Red Sox, we talked about a big market team, and they want to be a big market team. But the number one that I had was the Mariners, man. I feel like the Mariners could be – they were a fringe playoff team last year, elite pitching, a lot of talent, and a lot of depth. There was talks about trading some of the pitching away because they have so much depth there. But, you know, they lost Eugenio Suarez. They lost Jared Kelenic, Teoscar Hernandez, Robbie Ray. Obviously, they missed out on Ohtani. They were big on Ohtani. Thinking that they would get him for some reason. Like Cody said, I think he was always a Dodger. I do like that they got Mitch Haniger back. Never should have left Seattle. He was great in Seattle. He's got a big bat. Yeah, exactly. Dodger high. Dude, that team rocks. And that's why it's so disappointing to see them do this. Just like Cody said earlier, they're another team that's having a problem with their TV deals with Root Sports. So that makes sense. But I feel like it's another team like the Mets that, you know, are giving all the fans all this hope and all this, you know, oh, we're going to have, you know, this big offseason, go make signings, it's going to be a good team, and then just not really doing anything. So I think they're probably my most disappointing team so far.
Yeah. You mentioned my team. I kind of had a toss up between the Red Sox and the Giants. Yeah. And I think it's more of the Red Sox because I love seeing Robbie Hyde throw all these these trade scenarios out there. And every single time he posts it, I'm like, I'm sorry, Robbie, it's not happening. And then he realizes that it's not happening. But I'm actually going to go with the division rival. I think the no-brainer answer in terms of team that had the most ambition to do something is the Giants. And it is how you said, Jake. They are now shitting on the city. And I mean, from even people that live in California, you know, like the podcast I do it with, like they all live in California. They know how bad San Francisco is. The players know how bad San Francisco is. Like if a city's bad, what makes me want to sign a long-term deal there? Like maybe a 1 year, 2 year deal. I mean, they had to wait until Robbie Ray, the Mariners couldn't trade Robbie Ray until a certain calendar date. And then his no trade clause went away. And then that was when they were like, let's get this guy. And, like, he can't say no. Like, so I don't know. I feel like they were linked to everybody. They were linked to Yamamoto. They were linked to Ohtani. They were linked to Cody Bellinger, who I don't think is going there. Matt Chapman, don't think he's going there. I really don't think they're getting any of these big free agents, which kind of sucks because I think the most fun I had watching baseball was in 2021 with that division race, even though the Dodgers ended up ultimately losing by one game. Like, it was probably the most, like, gut-wrenching season. You know, like every single game mattered. Like, And when the Giants are playing good, like, I want another Dodgers and Giants playoff series. Those division matchups for the NLDS, like, they are heart pumping. Like, even with the Diamondbacks this year, not as much, but the Padres in 2022, that one was a stressful series for the Dodgers as well. So, baseball is good when the Giants are good. Yeah. And it's good when they're competing with the Dodgers. And it just seems like until the city itself gets cleaned up or they find another way to draft and develop these guys, I don't think Bob Melvin's really going to help this team that much. You know, like, there's only so much the manager can do. So, and then you look at, like, there was another report, Trevor Plouffe was talking about this, you know, obviously former player, he talks to players. He said that some of the reason why these players don't want to go there is because of the Dodgers. They said, we want to at least try to compete for the division. And there's like no shot. There's like no shot to get it done. You have the Padres, who I still think are a talented team. You have the Diamondbacks, who just won the NL pennant. And they made some upgrades and they retained some players as well. So it's extremely hard. Like, the Giants right now on paper are a fourth place team, and they're barely above the Rockies, who I'm extremely high on too, because out of nowhere, the Rockies have a very good young pitching staff and they have a lot of good pitching prospects, and they had a lot of good guys come up last year and hit really well. I forget the one dude, I forget his name. I got to remember after the episode, but he had a really good season last year coming up, and he was like on the MLB.com's most undervalued like lineup. But yeah, they have a good young team as well. I'm extremely like worried if I was a Giants fan. So I'll pick them as my go-to.
I think there's another team that's along that same kind of line. It's the Blue Jays. Like, it feels like nobody wants to go to the Blue Jays. I mean, they were in on all these guys like Ohtani, like Bellinger, and, you know, and they ended up with, I mean, I love Kevin Kiermaier, but they ended up with Kevin Kiermaier and Isaiah Conner-Flip. I think that's another kind of team where, you know, it's a fringe playoff team. Another in a tough division. I mean, you have the 100-win Orioles, the 99-win Rays. You have the Yankees, who just got Juan Soto. You have the Red Sox, who, you know, the Red Sox. But everybody else are kind of competing. Another team that you expected to do more that's just now, I mean, a fourth place team, question mark? Like, is that what you think?
Yeah. And I definitely want to get your opinion on this before we close it out here is, you know, you're embedded in Dodgers Twitter. I'm embedded in Phillies Twitter. And I see it. A lot of Phillies fans are very flustered with the way the offseason's gone, because ever since they signed Nola, they've kind of been quiet. Like, they've been working behind the scenes. Like, they are trying to actively get deals done. But it just seems like some teams you find that they're spoiled. You know, I've seen it with Dodger fans where they're extremely spoiled. And I think Phillies fans are starting to get to that same boat where a lot of these, I will say, casual fans, they just want move after move. But you got to look at some of these other teams who aren't making any moves at all. And that's catastrophic. Like, the Phillies just re-signing Aaron Nola, I would have been like, run it back. Like, there you go. Maybe extend Wheeler. That was the thing we talked about last week. But, what do you think about the Phillies offseason? Like, are you agreeing with some of those fans that are saying it's a fail, like, we need to go more people?
No, I think the biggest reason why people are so upset is, this, like I said earlier, the same reason about the Mets, the same reason about the Blue Jays. They're a big market team, so they're linked to every free agent. Like, there is still people linking us to Jordan Montgomery and these other pitchers, which Blake Snell might be a Philly by the time we start, you know, the regular season, but that's a discussion for another time. This team is a 95-win team. Like, I don't see a problem. Like, I don't understand why everybody's like, oh, you know, you didn't win. I understand we love talking about not winning the last game, but winning 95 games during the regular season is pretty good. Re-signing Nola was the top, you know, priority for the offseason. And I think a Wheeler extension comes soon. It's what it's been sounding like. So I'm not as upset. I think it's just upsetting. The media has drawn them into so many people. And they've shown, you know, willingness to spend. I mean, they offered Yamamoto over $300 million. So it's not like they're not willing to spend. But Dave's not going to go out and do something stupid for a team that is in a great position right now. I think people are people are just so upset about what happened last year. I think that's what's really causing the distress. So I'm kind of over it, but I'm really not over it. So it's just a different it's just a different offseason just from a media standpoint.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that's a great way to close out this episode of Clubcast. Mm-hmm. Again, huge shout out to Pipe and Hot Gas coming on, Josh, Kevin. We always enjoy having your guys' Mets takes, baseball takes in general. Yeah, we're getting really close to the actual baseball being played here, guys. Only a few more weeks left. some of these free agents, they got to start signing sooner rather than later. You know, Blake Snell, we've mentioned this episode. Reese Hoskins, a guy where I don't know where he's going. That could be a topic for next week's episode. And Cody Bellinger as well. So things are going to start popping off here, hopefully, in the next week or two. Where we get some of these, most of the signings done. You know, we had arbitration was happened today when we recorded this. Now a lot more teams have at least a general idea of their roster and where their payroll is at with these guys that are on there. So it definitely going to be an interesting next couple weeks. And we're getting closer to February. That's when pitchers and catchers start to report. And we're all here excited. So,
I'm just waiting for that first video from the Phillies account of Zach Wheeler popping the glove, and then we'll all be back. It'll all be good.
Yep. So, like I said, that'll about do it for this episode of Clubcast. Be sure to follow us on social media at SnavelyCody6, at JHuber_4. Pipe and Hot Gas, show their content some love. They've been doing a lot of stuff with football. Are you guys doing the football picks for the playoffs?
Yeah, we already did them. Yeah. Posted them.
Okay. Yeah. So go ahead, like, repost that. Kind of interested to see where everyone's picks are with those. But yeah, that about does it. Huge shout out to Pipe and Hot Gas, and we'll see you guys next time.